My dad loves to tell the story of a dinner party that we hosted for my childhood priest. I think I was maybe 8 or 10, somewhere in there. My parents' best friends had joined us, and my dad was cooking steaks. The conversation was lively, with everyone carrying on while my dad finished up the dinner preparation. When suddenly, a burst of flames came up from the stovetop where the steaks had been cooking on the Gen Air. Big flames, looking like they might just take us all out. And as the flames rose, my mom jumped back and shouted out really loud, "Jesus Christ!" The flames immediately disappeared, and we were all left staring at each other, which quickly led to us uncomfortably staring at the priest. My mom looking especially red-faced and guilty. My parents' friend broke the ice. "Mary was just saying a little prayer, Father." The priest smiled and said, "Well, good thing it worked." I grew up saying lots of memorized words that we called prayer. Our Father, Hail Mary, Grace Before Meals, Glory Bees. At least in public, the act of prayer was not spontaneous or creative, and it really didn't have that much to do with responding to our inner feelings, at least not as I was taught. It was scripted and routine, and a lot closer to the practice of reciting multiplication tables or words for the upcoming spelling bee than it was to an authentic expression of my heart. Which may be why, as an adult, like Mary Oliver, I have often not been exactly sure what a prayer is. I mean, I have studied plenty about prayer at this point, and I've done quite a bit of praying, especially as it turns out to be a pretty big part of my job. So I have come to some basic understanding, I suppose. And then when someone asks me what it means to pray, I offer that prayer is a human act and about our human lives. And as Eleanor said about ritual last week, prayer is an act best understood as impacting the one or ones who are praying, rather than imagining that it will influence or change anything or anyone else. Prayer helps me know what I should do, helps me align more fully with compassion and gratitude. You know the bumper sticker, "Prayer changes things," you might have seen? From this perspective, it might better read, "Prayer changes me." I do think this is true. But also, I've started to wonder why it matters exactly what a prayer is, and why we put energy into clarifying what we think about what's going on in prayer. I mean, maybe it changes people. And maybe there's some energetic force that our intentional thoughts and feelings help shape through prayer. Maybe a bunch of us focusing on feelings of compassion and gratitude and love does change things and change the world in ways we can't possibly predict. Maybe we should conceive of those changes as God. Or maybe not. Does it really matter? I mean, what difference does what a prayer is make in terms of what its practice is able to do for us and with us? Do we have to clarify our intellectual beliefs in order to acknowledge and attend to our vulnerability, our gratitude, and our wonder? To name and claim our vulnerability, our gratitude, our wonder, which, by the way, are, according to writer Anne Lamott, the three types of prayer: help, thanks, wow, vulnerability, gratitude, wonder. And when I sit in an interfaith circle of service of a shared concern, and one of my neighbors offers a prayer that seems to have a certain belief system around it, though I don't really know, I mean, I'm kind of guessing, in order to join in that prayer, do I need to clarify my belief system doesn't really jive with what I think his is? That the God he's invoking isn't a God I believe in? mean, we can do all this clarifying. We do often all this clarifying. We can and we do, which means we also can and do a really good job of keeping ourselves just a little outside the prayer, a little outside the circle, and a little outside the place where the prayer's gifts actually live. A few years back, when my kids were both super little, like 3 and 1, not quite 1 actually, Carrie went away, my partner, Carrie, she went away for an overnight trip for the first time, which left the kids and me on our own. I remember so vividly one really terrible moment late one night where Gracie would just not go to sleep, and she kept getting out of bed and going in and poking her brother through the, you know, slats in the crib. And he would, of course, then cry horribly. And then, lo and behold, I had a sermon to write, so I was nervous and trying to get focused on that, when suddenly I started to feel nauseous. And then right then, Gracie called out that her stomach was starting to hurt. She didn't feel well. And it was getting so late, and I was so tired from having a baby and a toddler and trying to do things like write sermons. Well, you can imagine where my mind went to next about what I thought was about to happen. At the time, I was part of a spiritual direction group with some other colleagues, a kind of small group ministry, and we'd been sharing about our attempts at prayer. I confessed that while I'd wanted to try, I didn't really get it. So when that moment came with my kids, it seemed pretty clear I should give it a shot. It was, as Christopher was saying about his journey, my kind of make it or break it moment, but about my personal prayer practice. Like my opportunity to do what I felt like I was asking others to do. So I just called out to the empty room that I was sitting in, the only word that came to mind, help. But because I was shy and feeling foolish, it was more like, help, 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 help. Now I'd like to tell you that I felt better after that pleading admission. I'd like to say that somehow help came, but that wasn't at all the impact. Rather than feeling more confident, I felt less. I felt scared and alone and in need. And on top of that, I felt dumb because here I was, an almost real live minister, and I couldn't come up with a better prayer than help. With that one repeated word in that one difficult moment, my prayer broke down any illusions I'd been holding and telling myself. You know the ones, like, I could do this all on my own, perfectly. I had it all under control. I could handle it all just fine. We may tell ourselves that we don't pray because we are intellectually opposed or at least confused about what a prayer is, or because we don't want to assent to a certain notion of God or God at all, or because we can't find the right words or offer them in the right way. But the greater obstacle to prayer, I believe, is what I came face to face with that night with my kids. Prayer is a practice of vulnerability. There's just no way to pray with any kind of authenticity. And I don't mean those rote ones that I grew up saying, those. I mean the ones like Christopher was getting at, the ones that speak from the heart. There's no way to pray like that without being in touch with those feelings of being unsure and even kind of foolish. There's no way to pray without admitting that you're a person who needs. Simply, you're a person who feels overwhelmed and scared and amazed and blessed and small and big all at once. Thinking back on my parents' dinner party, we all laughed at the thought that my mom's accidental expletive in the presence of this holy man could be a prayer. But these many years later, I've come to realize that's precisely what it was. Her calling out from that place of being acutely aware of just how risky and vulnerable it is to be human. This practice of vulnerability is why prayer is such a potentially powerful practice. And as theologian Karl Barth observes, why it does have the potential to change the world. As anything that has the capacity to connect us more fully to our shared vulnerability and to teach us some resiliency for staying with that awareness, not to run from it, put up walls, but to take the walls down. Has the capacity to connect us in those three important ways I often talk about, to self, to others, and to something larger than ourselves. Anything that has the power to remind us of how we can't do what needs to be done on our own, that we need help, also has the power to inspire us to reach out more honestly, authentically, and to say more clearly what it is we need, which, lo and behold, it turns out, increases the chance we'll actually get what we need. That prayer I said with my kids, mostly it inspired me the next day to call Carrie and say thank you. I can't do this on my own. Very clear about that. There's no right or wrong way to pray. As Gandhi observed, it is less about the words than about the feeling in your heart. You can just as easily find authenticity in that repeated Our Father as you can in that spontaneous help. However, for a long time, I did feel stuck by the feeling of just not knowing what to say until one of my colleagues shared a formula that he used in praying, one he'd learned from a minister in the Unity tradition. And so as I stumbled my way through trying to create a prayer practice, I found his formula helpful and liberating. And I really wish that someone would have taught it to me earlier. So in the case that it might feel like a gift for you as well, I want to end my reflection today by offering it to you. It's a 5-step formula. So step 1, you begin with what you understand as the big reality. So in this vast and beautiful universe beyond our comprehension. Step 1. Step 2, you place yourself in that big reality. So our lives are so small, and yet somehow they matter. They make a difference. Step 3, you move to a request or a petition, an intention. May we have the courage and strength to do what we can with the time we have. Step 4, you give thanks. We are so grateful for this life and all its blessing, and all our many partners. And the last step, you let it all go. It being whatever might be getting in the way of you experiencing life's greater goodness and abundant love. We release to the air, the room, the universe, our expectations, our fears, and our desires for control. So you put all these steps together and you get, here's the total prayer of the 5. In this vast and beautiful universe beyond our comprehension, our lives are so small, and yet somehow they matter. They make a difference. May we have the courage and strength to do what we can with the time we have. We are so grateful for this life, its blessings, all our many partners. We release to the air, the universe, our expectations, our fears, our desires to control, that only the greatest love will fill us up. Amen. I'll put the formula up on our Facebook page and on our website this next week. It will be, of course, on the podcast. You can try it out. Let me know how it goes. If you're feeling really brave, you can respond to that Facebook post with your prayer or send me a note. And don't forget, of course, that help, thanks, wow, they work just as well, as does apparently Jesus Christ. No matter what words you may use, let them come from your heart. Give voice to that still, small, or loud and passionate voice within. Cultivate the courage for such a risky and powerful practice. Pursue and rejoice in all the many ways we may discover to honor this precious reality of this gift of life. Life that just keeps on with its blessings and its heartbreaks. Life that keeps on giving us grace. Amen. And blessed be.